Oh, wait, we should probably say who we are, huh?
Well, it's a bonus episode. Surely they know.
I would hope so. Anyway, I'm Sam. She's Paige. This is M-Cubed.
Short and sweet.
This is one of our bonus episodes that we've talked about doing. The Missing Women Task Force. So we've talked about doing this, and we finally got the first six ready. Not sure if six will fit into this one or not, or we'll see. But we got the first six ready. And we're going alphabetical order according to the flyer.
Are we?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I need to figure out mine alphabetical order?
I can help with that.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I was just going because it was easier to, like, mark off which one I did.
Okay, I gotcha.
But there's a total of 54, 59, something like that. Some crazy number. So it's going to be quite a few installments.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't know what we're talking about, these are the women that were listed on the Missing Women's Task Force flyer when they were half-assing the investigations into, I think it was a total of 69 women before they cut a few back. They found some of them. But this was during Robert William Picton's reign of terror, is what it was.
Tiny Dick Man.
Tiny Dick Man. And I'm going to refrain from talking about him when talking about the women because he's not the main part of this series. The women are the main focus because they need their voices heard. Everyone needs to know that they were more than their circumstances and how they disappeared or were murdered.
Right.
So, can I jump in? Ready?
I'm ready.
All right. So, before I start, like always, I am so sorry if I mispronounce anyone's name because it is not my intention in any way, shape, or form. But I will post the pictures and the names correctly, not like Live, Left, Murder in our thanking the patrons. Anyway, so the first one is Marlene Abogosis. According to the flyer, she was last seen in January of 1984. Marlene was 25 years old and from the Pine Creek First Nation. And in the winter of 1983, she called her sister, who was very close with her, by the way, saying that she was tired of Vancouver's downtown east side and was going to leave for Calgary soon. And on her trip there, she was going to stop by her sister's house because it was on the way. So when Marlene didn't show up as planned, the sister, attempted numerous times to report her missing, but we all fucking know what happened. She was pushed to the wayside, and you know, she's from the downtown east side, so she's not important. She makes me so very angry.
Mm-hmm.
She tried multiple times to file a formal missing report, but it wasn't until 2002 that they officially filed her under the missing persons.
So how long was that?
83 to 2002.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Is that 19 years? Yeah, 19 years. So that was 19 years from the time she disappeared to the time that she was actually reported, officially put on the missing persons list. And at that time, in 2002, because her sister had called and called and called, and again when Picton was, and I'm sorry I'm talking about it, but when he was picked up and they talked about his victims, her sister was like, I'm going to call. So she did. They collected DNA samples from her sister, but there were no matches found to
on the farm.
Picton farm. Which, really? I don't know if that's like a thankful moment or not, because they still don't have answers.
Well, she went missing in 83.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that first Jane Doe that they found was in 85. And she was found, half of her skull was found in...
In the farm?
No, in the water.
Oh.
There were bones that were linking it linking that portion of the skull to the farm.
Right.
But he could have adapted different hiding.
Right.
Yeah. But Marlene and her sister grew up in a family of 16.
Whoa.
16. That blows my mind. I can't imagine. Unfortunately, when they were children, they were removed from their parents and placed in the residential school system. I'm not entirely sure what that is, but it doesn't sound like the best place for kids to go. I could be wrong, but...
Is it like a boarding school?
Maybe, but like foster care portion. So, not great.
Wrong.
Her sister was interviewed in a newspaper article, and she said, "I remember a whole bunch of them were coming to take the kids away." And she, talking about Marlene, had some peanuts or something in her hand, and I asked her to give me some, and she said no. She was thinking she would go hungry if she gave them to me. Like, that's how scared they were of these people coming to take them away.
Yeah.
So when they turned 18, or before, actually, they were struggling with addiction. Fortunately for Marlene's sister, she was able to get help through the AA program, and she maintained her sobriety for quite a long time. But Marlene was not as fortunate. She continued down that path and eventually made her way to Vancouver's downtown east side, which was not a great place either. When she tried, Marlene's sister said that when she tried to report her sister missing, when she first went missing back in 83, she recalls them being the police, being interested in her sister missing until she mentioned that she was living in the downtown east side. And then it went to something more like, and I quote, this is from her, "Well, what do you expect us to do? Get up and jump and start looking when somebody reports them missing. People go missing all the time."
Wow. The fuck.
And this led me to decide that after we're done with the missing persons, the Missing Women Task Force flyer, I want to talk about the findings from Vancouver's police department's inquiry.
See who got fired!
No, it's just going to piss everybody off more from Uh-oh. What I've gathered so far.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. No, it's fucking terrible. A lot of these women aren't going to have a lot of information, especially if they were not technically counted as one of Picton's victims. But the next one is Serena Abbotsway. According to the Missing Women's Task Force flyer, she was last seen in August of 2001. As we know, she was confirmed to be one of Picton's victims and was one of the six he was tried for. So when she went missing in August of 2001, like, she was immediately reported missing. Immediately. Like, within the same month. And she was reported missing by her foster mother. Serena's brother said, "Serena did not choose to live the way she did. Circumstances chose it for her. Serena, quite often, when talking to us on the phone, would ask us to make sure that the younger foster kids, younger children, would never end up living the life that she was living." She was born to Aboriginal parents, and when she disappeared in 2001, she was only 29 years old. She was removed from her biological parents when she was 4 years old, and she had endured entirely too much abuse. All the trauma. And I'm not going to go into it further than that. Just, there was a good reason she was not with her parents. She was placed with Bert and Anna Dreyers in 1976. They later recall her being pretty and bubbly and sweet. They described her as a lovely girl with a lot of good in her. They said she always had a good word for someone, and she was very caring. But, like many of the people in her situation, sometimes whatever's going on in your head, and at that point, mental health treatment was not like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a stigma then. So she didn't get the treatment that she so desperately needed. Though I think that her foster parents would have done that for her had it been an option. They seem like the people that would actually take care of all of her needs, not just she's got clothes and food and stuff like that.
Right.
She started getting into a lot of trouble at school, and so for a few years, her foster parents were able to homeschool her to make sure she got the education that she needed. But then after a while, it got to the point where they couldn't handle her either. So, unfortunately, they made the decision to move her to a group home. From everything that I've seen, it didn't look like she held any grudges against them. Like, she understood why they made the decision they made. That's just hard for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. So she maintained contact with them until she disappeared, which is why her foster mother was the one that contacted the police department to report her missing. So she didn't call when she was supposed to for her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
They immediately called and reported her missing. Somehow, I guess after she got out of the group home, she had an addiction, and she made her way to the downtown east side. In 1977, she was hospitalized due to a brutal beating from one of the Johns. Like, she had a skull fracture. She was in a coma for a while, and she survived. Like, they did all the treatment and everything. She even had, like, a metal plate in her head, I think it was. But unfortunately, she didn't move out of the downtown east side, and she continued sex work to make the money she needed to get her fixes and everything. And it pisses me off that she survived that and she didn't survive the Tiny Dick Man.
I know.
Anyway, she was very memorable to the people that worked with the women and the men in the downtown east side. So, because she ended up becoming, maybe not friends, but acquaintances enough. Like, she would frequent the Wish place, the women's shelter type thing that allowed them to come get, take showers, hot food, and all of that stuff. And then also the health van that would be out there and make sure that they were taking care of themselves. And she was very regular. She would go to Wish, she would go to the health van, she would take care of herself. She would also attend church fairly regularly. Like, it said that she loved singing the hymns. At some point, she was baptized in a service in Crab Park. And they used the ocean on the edge of the park to do the actual baptism. I thought that was kind of cool. And in spring of 2001, this was just months before she disappeared, she was having a bit of a rough time. Her asthma was getting to the point where she had to carry an inhaler with her at all times. There was no exception. She ended up in the hospital because of it for a short time. She was evicted from the home she was staying at, and it was hard finding the help she needed. In the summer of 2001, Serena was seen by a woman who worked at Wish. Serena at that time told her she was going to the country and was seen with Tiny Dick Man himself. When Serena didn't call and talk to her foster parents for her birthday, like I said, they were worried and reported her missing. And I am going to end this on a poem that she wrote within the last year of her life, talking about the missing women who have just vanished over the last year, like decade or more. And it's called In Memories of My Sisters. You were all part of God's plan. He probably took most of you home, but he left us with a very empty spot. It's very true. The majority of the information I got about her was from the book On the Farm by Stevie Cameron. She did an amazing job gathering the information about the victims that were decided was victims. The next one, Sharon Nora Jane Abraham. She was last seen in December of 2000 and was one of Picton's victims. Her DNA was found on the farm. She was the mother of 5 children, and she was 35 years old when she went missing. And unfortunately, there is not a lot of information on this woman, and I don't understand.
Yeah, especially she had 5 children.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I guess, an old friend spoke with a reporter. They had lived in, like, a transition house where Sharon had left an abusive relationship, and she was living there with her children. And so they spent nearly a year together in this, I don't know whether it was a facility or if it was, like, just a big old house that had a bunch of rooms that could take all the kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she went on to say this. She never drank when she was with me, never did drugs. We didn't go to bars. We did things with the kids. She always made sure the kids had diapers. She wasn't out buying cigarettes and beer. She always made sure the rent was paid and there was food in the house. The 3 of them, Sharon and her 2 children, were such a happy family unit. I'd like to tell her kids someday that their mom was pretty cool, and it breaks my heart because she loved them so much. And, like, I don't know how old her kids were when she went missing or where they were.
I knew this was going to be hard, but yeah. Jesus.
Oh, no, the last one's worse. The next one is a short one as well. I legitimately found very little, and it was a, not the Charlie Project, but something similar that, like, lists her, shows her picture and the description and where she was last seen and stuff like that. And this is what I had to say. Elaine is classified as endangered missing. She's been missing since March 15th, 1986. She was 20 years old when she went missing. She was white. She was 5'6", or 5'5", depending on what what source you looked at. She had shoulder-length brown hair, brown eyes. She had a couple of things that she went by. I'm assuming this is when she was working. But one was Lisa Marie Morrison and Nancy Boyd. She was last seen in Vancouver in 1986. She had made plans to travel to Seattle, Washington sometime in that year. She traveled a lot, apparently. But she traveled from, you know, Vancouver to British Columbia to Seattle, Washington, and kind of made her rotation that way. But nobody's ever heard from her or seen her since. But there was a number that was listed as, if you have any information on her whereabouts or what happened to her, contact the Vancouver Police Department at 604-598-4306. Angela Arsenault? I'm going to go with that. And if it's wrong, I'm very sorry. Angela was 17 years old when she went missing. So I got this information from Reddit because literally nothing anywhere else. I googled the shit out of her name and I could not figure out anything. She often went by Angie. She, like many of the other women, began a struggle with addiction, and eventually that led her to the downtown east side. But she was able to get out a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean she stopped sex work, she stopped all of the stuff that she was doing. She had found somebody that was very supportive, and they were dating, and he had actually moved her out of downtown Eastside, and they were living together. But apparently her former pimp was harassing her to return. I'm almost positive that she was classified as a runaway, and this makes me angry because she had been accepted into school. She had made plans with her mother to go spend the night or a period of time with her. Like, she had plans. She had goals. She didn't just leave. But here's the story that was told from Reddit. Angie was last seen on August 19th, 1994. She was planning a shopping trip with her mother the next day and made plans to spend the night at her mother's home in Surrey. That day, though, she had spent the day with her boyfriend and another friend. They were shopping. And I guess her boyfriend decided to stay out with the other friend. So they split ways, and he made sure she got on the bus to go home. And he ended up returning in, like, the early morning hours. And when he got there, she wasn't there. The lights were on. A window was open. All of her belongings were left behind, including her shopping bags, purse, wallet, ID, $200 that she had in her wallet. She was reported missing, but the police department waited an entire month to check out her apartment.
Wow.
Not only the boyfriend reported her missing, but there was a little bit of weirdness on that, too. I think it said in Reddit he waited like 2 weeks, thinking that she may have left. I don't know why, but her mother reported her missing before that. I don't know. And then it took them another 2 weeks after, or it took them an entire month to go and
look,
actually investigate even a little bit.
And she was living with him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what the purpose was. Like, there was literally, that is the information that I got.
Okay.
Seems a bit odd.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
There was nothing found on the farm?
No, there was nothing that was linking her to them. The next one This one's the hard one, and I am so sorry. I'm going to cry. I know I am, because I'm going to read something from her child. I know, I'm sorry. I told you not to wear makeup. So, the next one, the last one, is Sherry Linda Baker. She was 25 years old when she was last seen in 1993, and she was officially reported missing in 2004.
You said that with a lot of hate.
I am fucking angry. Why the f- I know why it happened. Mm-hmm. Just like all of these other women that we're going to talk about, there is a reason it happened, and it was because of Vancouver Police Department being absolute dicks and not giving two fucks about people who they felt were beneath them.
Get mad.
That is what that is. So I'm going to rein that back in, and I'm going to start talking about this woman and probably cry, and I apologize. I legitimately couldn't find much of anything on this woman. Just that she was 25 and she was last seen in 1993 and reported missing in 2004. But I managed to stumble across a Facebook group named In the Memory of Sherry Linda Baker. And her daughter runs the Facebook group. It does, I did my little sleuthing, and it didn't seem like they had been able to be around each other enough for her to have any, like, core memories.
Yeah.
So she knows her mom. She had time with her, but I don't think there was a lot of time with her. I think she was very young when she disappeared. This is one of the last posts that I saw. It says, "Hi, Mama. It's your birthday tomorrow. I've been thinking about you so much today. It's like I feel you and your cries sometimes. I can't help but ask how you could be gone 29 years and not one person saw you. Not one person knew you. Not one person could even share a memory about you that could explain anything about what happened to you. It breaks my heart that there was a serial killer who could have taken your life via pig farm, but in my heart of hearts, I don't feel like that's what happened to you. I pray to God every day that I will be met with the truth and there will be someone who will do the right thing and be your voice. Someone saw something somewhere, and I hope and pray that person does the right thing. It is as if your disappearance led to such a destructive path for the family that we no longer know what it means to be family. To see such brokenness and disarray due to your lack of presence is deafening. It's like the screams of wounded souls is so loud that nobody can speak. I pray one day everyone heals and finds peace in their hearts over the loss of a loved one. I pray for peace and comfort for those who suffer in silence with nobody to talk to when they so badly just need an ear to listen. The only way forward is through trust, truth, and healing, with or without the support. I love you, Mom, and I truly pray that one day your story can and will be heard. I wanted to wish you an early birthday because I feel that I need a day to grieve you. It happens every year. You always remain strong in my heart. Love always, your daughter, Crystal. You are missed and thought about often. XOXO, may you rest in the stars." I will post a link to all of the online sources that I could find so that you guys can see the things that I saw, I guess, if you want to. That's the first installment of the Missing Women Task Force. If you happen to be listening to this or listen to our Picton episodes and you have any information that you would like to add, if you have any information about any of the women that we're going to cover or we have covered, because I don't care to, like, pop back and say, hey, this is what we've learned since the last time that we talked about them, I'll add it in. I hate that there's so little information about some of these women. Mm-hmm. Because they are so much more than what they were perceived as by the Vancouver Police Department.
Yes.
They deserved so much better. So my hope in these episodes is that we give a voice, even if it's a brief voice, to the beautiful souls that were lost, however they were lost. It breaks my heart for the families and the friends that had to go through this. Mm-hmm. Because I'm talking about this from decades later, and I just want to cry.
Yeah, it gives me goosebumps.
So, if you have any information, please, please let me know, and I don't know. That's it. That's all I got for you, because I'm going to start crying again. I don't know when the next one will be out, but we will let everybody know.
We just want to thank you guys for listening and sticking with us through all of Picton, and I mean, just helping us get their voices heard. Thank you.
Bye.